Governor Jerry Brown was in Bell Gardens today to help unveil a new project. The Bicycle Casino will open in 2015 and may provide some much-needed help to the city. Emmanuel Martinez reports on how the hotel will provide a spotlight on the city of Bell Gardens.
Bell Gardens needs jobs and opportunities. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, its unemployment rate is at 17%. The U.S. Census reports that 25% of Bell Gardens residents live under the poverty line. Governor Jerry Brown believes he has a solution, a new hotel. It's a hotel for the Bicycle Casino in Bell Gardens. Brown was there unveiling its launch.
So I think it's very important to put the spotlight on those communities a little east of downtown.
State Senator Ricardo Lara agrees. He says the transformation of the city is important because it may attract more investors.
We are reinventing our local economies here and the image that we have in the Southeast, working really hard to bring investors that are going to be able to change the face of the Southeast.
Lara says the project will help lower the unemployment number by hiring locally.
They might not all come from Bell Gardens, but they'll come from Southgate, Linwood, Cudahy, Maywood, which is all kind of the Southeast LA corridor in which we need to create more jobs. And each of these cities are struggling with unemployment rates.
The casino will provide 300 construction jobs and 250 permanent jobs. But some residents, like Jose Rivera, don't support this project altogether.
You know, it just takes away from the feel of a real community of just hardworking people and neighborly people, you know, and people that just want to live a peaceful life without having to have that Las Vegas scene here.
The casino is a vital part of the city, though. It provides more than 40% of the city's general fund. But by 2015, when the hotel opens, that number may change. Emmanuel Martinez, Annenberg Radio News.
The LA County Board of Supervisors voted today to move $100 million in funds from one woman's jail to another. The money was supposed to build a detention center near the city of Castaic, but supervisors have shifted it to the Mira Loma Detention Center in Lancaster. The county was in danger of losing state funding for the jail because the Castaic project was stalled. Los Angeles City Council has until tomorrow to appeal state regulations on popular rideshare apps. City Council members delayed their decision on the issue today. Their appeal could put the brakes on these ride services, even if City Council agrees to team up with traditional taxi companies in voting against rideshare apps. Mayor Garcetti is expected to veto the appeal. And reporter Karen Lynn takes a look at LA's ride-sharing service to find out what all the fuss is about.
Smartphone applications like Lyft and Uber have been around since last year. They're simple to use. Take Lyft as an example. All you have to do is to log in with your Facebook account, provide a cell phone number and your credit card information. The app will locate where you are and automatically link you with the nearest driver. Your fee is based on the time and distance of the ride.
It's a better experience usually than taking a taxi.
That's Kathy Sanchez. She signed up as a driver through the app last Friday. Now she spends 18 hours a week driving for Lyft. She puts a giant pink mustache in front of her white Toyota Corolla as part of the company's branding.
I like talking to people. I like meeting people. I used to be in customer service, and I miss that part of the job of getting to meet different people every day. And like, you never know what kind of person you're going to get, and it's cool to get different perspectives on things.
Lyft announced in August that it has reached its 1 millionth ride after just 1 year in business. The service is now available in 16 cities in the country. California approved regulations for ride-sharing services like Lyft and Uber last month, the first in the nation to do so. This means companies like Lyft can expand to other cities in the state with fewer regulatory roadblocks. However, not all people are happy to see the growth of the business. LA City Councilman Paul Carras says safety is a big concern.
Maybe most importantly, we've been told by insurance companies that if someone is driving their own car and they get in a serious accident, their policy for them personally is not going to cover them as a de facto taxi driver. So you could get in a huge accident as a passenger and then find you're not covered for your medical expenses.
Lyft driver Sanchez admits that she was a little worried about safety issues at the beginning. But now she's not concerned because the company tracks the car and customer during the ride. Plus, both the driver and passenger will rate each other after the ride. According to the Lyft website, those with constant low scores are blocked from providing and using the service. Currently, Annenberg Radio News.
One of two airport workers charged with setting off dry ice bombs at LAX was arraigned today on felony charges. He pleaded not guilty to charges of possession of a destructive device near an airplane. Prosecutors requested that his bail be set at $500,000. Police say the dry ice bombs were a misguided prank gone wrong. Inny Gase and another suspect, DiCarlo Bennett, are scheduled for a bail review hearing tomorrow. Many low-income college students feel they can't afford health insurance, but Cal State LA is telling them they can. Madeline Newells reports.
Cal State Los Angeles is one of many California State University campuses hosting forums this week to educate college students about health insurance. The school received a grant from Covered California to educate all of the students in the CSU system. Public health professor Walter Zellman is heading up the effort.
Most of our students will be eligible for substantial financial assistance if they enroll in insurance through Covered California. And many of them will be eligible for the new Medi-Cal, because Medi-Cal is, you know, for low-income Californians. And the new Medi-Cal is changed in that you don't have to have a child.
The forums are run by students under the direction of Zellman. Natasha Baran-Sabati, a recent grad from Cal State LA, led today's forum.
You know, the turnout today was great. I think a lot of people, you know, like to see stuff come from students and from departments related to the school, so that brings a lot of credibility back to them.
30 students attended today's forum, but for many, attendance is a challenge. Graduate student Oliver Jameo says he has trouble finding one that fits his schedule, but has been keeping up with the latest news.
I do not have insurance. I have done my own research, and I don't have that much income, so I might be qualified for, I think it's medical. It was Healthway LA a few months ago, but then they're transitioning to that medical since we have this new law for the Obamacare.
There are more than 70 forums going on this week throughout the Cal State system. Madeline Wools, Annenberg Radio News.
Federal health care under the Affordable Care Act is now available to Americans. But the website that sells it is giving millions of customers headaches. Catherine Davis reports.
Healthcare.gov, the government's new online marketplace for insurance, has been giving users a lot of error messages and frozen screens. And those problems have limited some people's ability to enroll in a federal healthcare plan. A survey conducted by USAMP found that 4 out of 5 Americans who attempt to sign up online run into technical difficulty. So, is it hard to get a website like this going without crashing, freezing, or error messages?
It's not hard at all. That's the other thing. No site in this day and age should be crashing.
Dana Chin is a professor at USC's Annenberg School of Communication and Journalism and an expert in web analytics. President Obama has called for a tech surge effort to fix the errors on healthcare.gov, but Chin says a lot of the damage is already done.
No one ever remembers if a site was late. They always remember if a site doesn't work. So if the site wasn't ready on October 1st, then it should not have launched. It's much better to start out with a site that's going to work than to just meet the deadline.
And Chin says the site's glitches aren't the only issue. A Pew Research study showed that 70% of visitors to the site so far are not uninsured. They were just visiting the site out of curiosity. Chin says that's a problem.
So what matters on a website is, did the site do what it was supposed to do?
Chin says it is especially surprising that the site hasn't reached its intended audience because, she says, during campaigns, Obama's team proved to be skilled at analyzing web traffic and reaching targeted segments of the population. Catherine Davis, Annenberg Radio News.
Martha Daniel contributed to that story.
Thank you.
It looks like we got clear skies this week with a low of 56 degrees tonight and comfortable temperatures in the mid-70s tomorrow and Thursday. Later on Annenberg Radio News, the online study of all online studies. Students at USC are circulating a petition to protest. Most of us know the guilt that comes from spending hours scrolling through Twitter's endless dashboard or stalking friends on Facebook instead of socializing in person. And while we've always suspected too much online activity can't be good for us, a new study confirms what we miss out on by spending too much time online.
We suspected the worst, that time on the internet cuts from our sleep, studying, or socializing with friends. But no one had ever figured out how much computer time cuts into our other activities. I went out on the street to get the average American's take. Here's Allison Begelman, a student screenwriter, and Kevin Egan, a writing professor.
On average, can you tell me how much time you spend on Facebook per day?
Too much to answer. Probably like an hour to an hour and a half.
What about browsing on Google or Wikipedia?
My main leisure activity online is reading newspapers, and on a weekday, I probably spend 3 or 4 hours doing that.
Do you feel like it cuts away from your time spent doing other things?
Yes. Sometimes I want to get rid of my Facebook, but I can't.
A study released this month confirms it's true. Spending time glued to the screen really does cut into our time spent on other activities. Dr. Scott Walston is an economist from the Technology Policy Institute, based out of Washington, D.C. He's also the author of the recent study, which is called What Are We Not Doing When We're Online? It measured online leisure, which Walston defines as social media, browsing the internet for non-work purposes, and even instant messaging. The study figures that for every hour spent browsing online, we spend 16 fewer minutes working, 7 fewer minutes sleeping, and 17 fewer minutes experiencing other activities, like going to parties or museums. The study also found that time spent in front of the screen eats away at time spent reading, playing sports, or even relaxing and thinking. What about socializing in person? Every hour online eats about 3 minutes of socializing in person, too. But here's the catch. Walston's study also found that an average of only 13 minutes for every 5 hours of daily leisure time is spent on the internet. That seems like nothing, so what's the big deal? Well, the survey excludes hours spent on Gmail, Netflix, online gaming, and even YouTube. It doesn't even account for time spent multitasking. Factor that into the equation, and you're looking at even more time spent online than ever before. So now that our suspicions are confirmed, what can the average person take away from our exponentially increasing online consumption? I'm not entirely sure, but no worries. I'll just Google it. Asala Sanipour, Annenberg Radio News.
Students at USC are circulating a petition to protest the fences put up around the campus. As Eamon Oyibokeh reports, students have divided opinions about campus safety.
No matter what side of the fence you're on, the subject of USC's security measures has students second-guessing the intentions of the university. From 9 p.m. to 6 a.m., students and faculty are required by campus security to show identification to get on campus. Some students believe the fence tells the community they're viewed as a threat and should be kept away. Student Micaiah Green from USC Change Movement started a petition yesterday against the chain-linked fences.
Just seeing the amount of racial profiling that's went on since the construction of the fences and seeing, hearing from the community members about how they're made to feel alienated and isolated from the USC community, it's deeply problematic.
Green believes the fences reinforce the racism that is prevalent on campus.
It seeks to define who belongs on campus and who does not. And it's like, so far that distinction has been made on the basis of color.
The petition urges students to send letters to President Nikias about removing the fences. Student Francesca Bessie agrees with the petition's message.
The gates to me just feel like, you know, a slap in the face to our community.
Some students believe the fences are the best way to keep the campus safe. Here's Rena Takamura.
I don't really have any strong opinions towards it. I think that it's a good, like, safe, like, method of keeping people out, I guess.
The gates don't disconnect USC from the community because it's so late at night. USC is open during the day, and the gates are open during the day for people to come, but at night, it's basically closed.
That was Shalaya Klempner. In a statement released earlier this year, the USC administration defended the fences, saying they enforce security measures that have been placed for years. But since the fences were built, there are only 8 of 27 entrances open to students and faculty. I reached out to campus security and administration for comments, but no one returned my calls. USC plans to replace the temporary gates with permanent gates after city permits are approved. Amen Oyeboke, Annenberg Radio News.
Recognize this song?
Double rainbow on the way across the sky.
How about this one?
Climbing in your windows, these nights of your people are.
This is all the work of none other than the Gregory Brothers. They've become famous for their series known as Auto-Tune the News and for songifying non-songs. I talked to the oldest of the brothers, Evan Gregory, by phone earlier today and asked him to describe who the Gregory Brothers are.
Me and my two brothers, Andrew and Michael, are really in real life brothers. And with my wife, Sarah, we have embarked on a journey where we discover songs in those dark corners of the universe that people previously didn't know there were songs.
So how do you guys find those videos?
Well, we used to kind of surf around and look for material ourselves, but over time we've started doing it in a crowdsourced way where our fans and our audience will like suggest stuff to us.
Okay, so is there an element that you guys look for in these videos that you get sent to you that makes it apparent to you that this is maybe gold for a Songify piece?
Yes, absolutely. There's like it's almost like being a talent scout for a record label, but just for someone that doesn't know they're going to be a singer yet. And so you look for like the right lyrics, the same way you'd look for like a hit song, but also the sound of someone's voice. There's like sonic properties that make something have the capacity to become really melodic and really catchy and hook people.
Okay, so could you tell us then which song or which Songify version you guys did is closest to your heart?
You know, that's like asking someone to pick their favorite child, you know. But out of our recent videos, I am really partial to a ballad that we co-wrote with Joe Biden earlier this summer, in which he implores everyone to buy a shotgun.
Do you guys ever keep in touch, or have you talked to any of the people that you have auto-tuned in your videos? Like Antoine Dodson, do you guys keep in touch with him?
Yeah. We're in pretty close touch with him, and you know, we hear from him every so often, and every so often we'll hear from politicians as well in some of our kind of news-based pieces. Sometimes you think if you're kind of poking a little fun that people will get up in arms about it, but mostly I think they really enjoy it. It's probably just fulfilling some kind of long-held dream that they could be a pop star.
Okay, well, on a more serious note, do you guys ever worry about crossing any lines of sensitivity when you guys are choosing which pieces to work on?
We do, you know, consider, you know, what are the issues that we're kind of really taking on? Because there have been a couple cases where we worked on a video that was more sensitive. I'm thinking of the examples of Antoine Dodson and the Bed Intruder song, where there are kind of negative stories with a kind of positive, triumphant, anthemic side to them, and that's the side that we try to make more powerful.
Okay, so you guys get a lot of attention from auto-tuning, but does the world know about the side of you that you guys can actually sing? I've heard some of your pieces, and they're great.
Why, thank you. It's very nice of you to say. I mean, You know, people know that to a degree. I mean, the videos that we work on through Songification are like really fun for us and really close to our heart. So we're excited to do that, and it doesn't make us feel bad that we have, you know, musical backgrounds that people don't know about necessarily. But that's also something that we still pursue.
Evan and the rest of the Gregory brothers will be speaking tonight at 7 p.m. in USC's Bovard Auditorium. Thank you so much for being with us, Evan.
Thanks for having me.
Jason White began playing the piano by ear at the age of 5. He now coordinates shows for American Idol and The X Factor. As part of our series on sound portraits of LA, we hear from White, music minister of West Angeles Church of God in Christ, one of the largest churches in LA.
Got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world. To this church, West Angeles Church, about 21, 22, and I've really kind of been here ever since, and then begin to start producing gospel music. For me, everything starts with, it starts with the melody. It starts with the piano, the root instrument. Grew up with my grandparents, and a house out in Pasadena, California, and this house had a lot of different old broke down instruments, an old player piano. I would go out there every morning before the family would get up there, maybe 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, and I would bam on the piano, and I would just peck, 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 peck. As I was coming up, you know, I would begin to play for my mother and play for different soloists. She would take me around to different funeral homes. Oh, just so crazy. As a young guy, this little kid, 11, 12 year old, going and playing hymns in funeral homes and churches. In the doctor's office, usually there's some music playing. If you're on hold, there's some music playing. It's the fabric of our lives. It is what moves us. When Jesus walks, sends away.
Oh, happy day. The Giants have finally won their first game of the series, defeating the Minnesota Vikings 23-7. The Vikings' newly acquired quarterback, Josh Freeman, made a lot of noise in his debut, but in a bad way. Victor Figueroa has more on last night's game and the upcoming World Series.
With a win, the Vikings could have been two games out of first place in the NFC North. But Monday night's game showed little hope for the purple, gold, and white, as Josh Freeman had a horrible game. Freeman threw for 190 yards on 20 of 53 attempts and one interception, showing why the Tampa Bay Bucs took the financial hit and released a young quarterback. While reigning MVP Adrian Peterson had a meager 28 yards rushing. The .09 combined winning percentage of the two teams coming in was the lowest in Monday Night Football history. In baseball news, tomorrow is Game 1 of the World Series. Expected to take the mound is Red Sox and Cardinals ace John Lester and Adam Wainwright. The game will start at 4:30 Pacific in Boston and feature two rookie managers in John Farrell and Mike Matheny. Victor Figueroa, Annenberg Radio News.
You might not have heard much about the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender experience in sports, but the Annenberg Institute of Sports, Media, and Society is working to change that. They're curating a conference starting today that runs until Thursday. David Cope spoke at the conference's opening. He's a former star running back who was blacklisted for his sexuality in the 1970s.
1975, I spoke out as a gay man in professional football. I was the only man who ever spoke out about that until fairly recently, when a number of other people have spoken out. And we're finally catching up. I'm very proud to make a contribution to a little bit better understanding in this world.
The conference is free to attend right here at USC Annenberg. The Trayvon Martin case is one of the most visible examples of alleged police misconduct in recent years, and charges of excessive force are common in many communities of color. South LA is one of those communities. Today, at the corner of Crenshaw and Slauson, protesters in hoodies held signs and chanted drawing honkings from passing cars. The protest was led by the October 22nd Coalition to Stop Police Brutality. A man who identified himself as Guate says this issue is important to the community.
The coalition stand is kind of like just draw attention to it and give ground to the families, people who have lost loved ones by the hands of police, of law enforcement. So that's a lot of the ground that's opened up for them.
This is the 18th year the protest has been held, and Guate says they used to be much bigger. Today there were about 30 protesters, but Guate says they'll be back next year and every year until police brutality becomes a thing of the past. Want to hear more news from South LA and beyond? Check out our website, annenbergradio.org, for more news about South Los Angeles, and remember to follow us on Twitter at Annenberg Radio. Now we check in with Alec Lesnick to see what's coming on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vizin.
Okay, hello guys. Well, the unemployment rate dipped down to 7.2%, but job creation in America is still below expectations. And in case the Edward Snowden affair didn't catch you guys off guard, the TSA is now going to have access to all kinds of information when you fly. Tune in later to find out. And the Australian wildfires have spread nearly 1,000 miles long. Find out why firefighters fear the worst is yet to come.
Great stuff, Alec. Thank you so much. We'll be sure to tune in.
Okay, guys. Have a good one.
It's the 50th birthday of the film Mary Poppins. The magical British nanny arrived in theaters via Umbrella on this day in 1963. Mary, here's hoping your anniversary is popping off. That's it for this Tuesday. Help today from Martha Daniel and Andy Vasoyan. A special thanks to ATVN for its help. Graham Clark produces the arts and culture segment, and Denise Guerra is the newscast producer. Our executive producer is Catherine Davis. And for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Ani Yukar.